This episode of the Golf Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, Jersey, New York, Tennessee, and Virginia. From boosted same-game parlays to live in-game odds, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today. You bet $100, you get $100 at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WynnBET. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNNBET. State restrictions do apply. And don't forget to go head over to the SGPN merch store. That's store.sportsgamblingpodcast.com and use promo code MADNESS for 10% off all orders of $40 or more. All right, DJs, welcome back. It's the Players DFS Show. It's your boy, Boston Capper, with the God of Golf himself, Steve Shermer, and very special guest, Mr. Andy Lack. Andy, what's up, buddy?
Not too much, guys. Honored to be a guest on your guys' show tonight for such a prestigious tournament. And I'm pretty excited for this week. I've always been like a low-key fan of the Players. I know it gets some shit as like people make fun of it as the idea of this like fifth major, because it's obviously not on the same tier as the majors. But I think as a standalone tournament, it's pretty great. So I'm pretty pumped for this week, guys.
Yeah, I hope this year isn't a disaster like it was last year. The weather looks like
it's cooperate.
Like what a shit show last year was. Like it was crazy. But yeah,
I haven't even looked, to be honest. Is it supposed to be super windy or anything like that?
It's gone back and forth. So it looks like there's gonna be some sort of weather system that happens sometime in the middle of the tournament. Now it seems like it's gonna happen overnight Friday to Saturday. I was looking earlier, looked like maybe there could be a little bit of wind on Saturday. It's changing though. It's fluctuating. So I think a cold front's going to come through. Kind of depends on the timing. Maybe slightly a advantage to PM AM, but it's early.
I hate having to deal with that. I was just going to say, like, honestly, like I just hope that like the waves are even. Like, yeah. I don't want to have to like talk or write about a wave advantage because it's the most annoying thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, that burned me bad last week. I mean, my outright card looked fantastic after 36 holes, but you can't win a tournament after 36 holes. And then everybody realized, oh, I don't like Bay Hill. And then they crater down the leaderboard. So, that was a nice reminder to don't maybe overreact to, certain wave splits, either at Sawgrass or Bay Hill. A lot of these tournaments that where course history seems to matter a whole lot, you know, at this, you know, these type of tournaments.
Yeah. I feel like this place has less like correlation to like course history, because you can eject so fucking fast here. Like it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, yeah. This, we talked about it last night. This is problems on every single hole, everywhere you look. It's designed to mess with you. And if you make a mistake, you're ejecto. That's it.
Yep. Andy, have you ever played TPC Sawgrass?
No, I'm not paying $500 for that.
It's more than that now, dude. It's like, fuck, it's like $800 or $900.
That's so silly to me in terms of like the concept of some of these public golf courses in America. I don't really understand it. I mean, you've played it, right, Capper?
Yeah. I didn't pay though. I never pay. Like, I used to have wholesalers.
Wait, how did you get on without paying?
Because the wholesaler would pay.
What's the wholesale?
So like wholesalers, when I was in like finance, guys who want me to sell their products.
Oh, right?
They come and like, hey, you want, like, you sold this much of product X. You want to come play TPC? Yes, I do. And so he's a member there, and I sold a lot of his products. So I played with him.
I
love it.
Like what, like how much do you think a round of golf should be there?
I don't know. Like, I guess maybe like $200, $250.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, because like I play King and Bear too, which is really nice. That's like $125. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, $250 seems like the max you should be paying to play golf anywhere. Like,
I agree.
It's nice, but it's nice, but it's not like I can play the the Valley course for like $125,
which I've heard is pretty good in its own.
That's cool
as well.
Yeah, it's cool. I like that course a lot. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let me transition a little bit to talking about TPC Sawgrass. So there's a couple changes that have been made to the golf course, some subtle stuff. I think the guy's name is Jeff Plotz, maybe the tournament director. Yeah. He said that they wanted to add.
He came over from Southwind, or he's been at a couple places, Southwind, Scottsdale. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they basically wanted to put a little more Pete Dye back in this place because it's been softened over the years. So a couple of the changes they made was they steepened some of the face on some of the fairway bunkers, added a couple more severe mogul mounds off the fairways, add some pop bunkers around one. One change I noticed, though, and I know you look at the GCSAA sheet. I look at it, too, and I noticed that the rough looks like it's a little longer this year. It's going to be 3.5 inches. So, I mean, it seems like, now, I don't know if I agree with this, but it seems like they're trying to make it a little more penal off the tee if you're going to miss a fairway. So, but I don't know. How do you feel about that, Annie? Do you think maybe that change might, you know, alter a little bit about the profile of the player you're looking for? Do you think that's going to actually make it a little more of a premium to hit the fairway? Or could the opposite happen where if it is difficult to hit fairways, it's going to make it, you know, favor more of like a longer hitter who can get a wedge under it and get it close to the green?
Well, first of all, this is news to me. Steve, when does the GSCAA sheet come out every year for the tournament? Because what happens is I always write my articles over the weekend on like Friday night and Saturday, and I use the one from last year because I know that it's not out by Friday and Saturday. But when does it usually come out? Like Monday morning?
So here's the thing. So most of this year, they've been actually pretty good getting out a couple weeks in advance. Like they actually have Valspars out right now, which another for next week, that rough is going to be about 3.75 inches. It seems like they're pretty upset that Sam Burns has been winning there. So they're kind of doing what Wiley's did this year, where they drove the rough a little more to kind of make it a little more premium, hit the fairway. Didn't really work all that great there. This one was actually late. It didn't come out until I think this morning. I did the same thing as you, where I just looked at last year's. I was like, okay, 2.5-inch ryegrass rough. That's not all that, penal. It's taken a little bit of the importance of hitting it in the fairway at Sawgrass the last couple of years. I also noticed as well, they're not doing the velvet bentgrass mix in with the oversee. It's just a Poa trivialis. So, I mean, that doesn't really matter all that much, but the rough thing definitely caught my eye. And I'm just wondering, just because, you know, it's so awkward off the tee at TPC Sawgrass. Like it just looks quirky and weird. And that, is it going to be a little more important to keep the ball in the fairway? Because, you know, even if you were in the rough and on the right side of a hole, you know, you could still get around. It's really just missing on the wrong side. Now, if you're going to be in the rough here, is that really, you know, is that going to drive the green regulation rate down? If that happens at a die course, you know, missing a green, you usually get punished. So I've been trying to rack my brain a little bit about how that change might impact the tournament.
Right. Well, in theory, yes. I mean, that's a pretty sizable difference, the difference between 2.5 and 4.5, because it was 2.5 last year. It wasn't 3.5.
It's an inch longer this year, which is definitely material.
Well,
do you think is it going to stop balls from rolling into the water more? Is that what they're trying to do?
No, I think they want to make it where, kind of like last week, where it is a little bit of a luck box that if you got a decent line, the ryegrass graph or the ball sinks to the bottom. I think maybe they did notice it with the ryegrass overseed. It wasn't as penal to try and hit balls to the green as it was back in Bermuda.
Easier. Yeah. Ryegrass overseed makes it way easier than if it was just pure Bermuda rock.
Exactly. Like if you look at like pre-2019, you look at some like the variance of how total strokes gained is determined. Like Data Golf has this chart. There's a big correlation to how accurate you were off the tee in the week that, you know, and how that determined your total strokes gained. Last 3 years, it's been kind of close to PGA Tour average. So it's definitely reduce the significance. So I'm wondering if that's going to actually add it. Cause I mean, I don't think this is going to be a situation where like a Wingfoot or even like a Bay Hill where it's really difficult to hold fairways. You might as well just go for the longer hitter here. Driver is taken out of your hands a whole lot. It's positional golf. And if you screw up hitting a 3-iron, you know, you're going to get punished. I guess where I stand, I think it actually might make it a little more important to hit the fairway, which, you know, it makes me want to actually take some guys that maybe, and you can look up this data, you know, how guys perform historically at TPC Sawgrass off the tee, because it is a little weird. It is a little challenging. You got to know what the correct side of the fairway to hit it on. And guys who just have had problems there, there's a couple of examples. I kind of worry about their chances this week, even if in theory, they're fairly accurate.
Yeah, I like that. I'm definitely going to keep that back of my mind as well. I mean, I think the thing about TPC Sawgrass is that it is a course where you do have a lot of options off the tee, right? Like there are a lot of different holes where you're going to see players taking much different strategies. Like there's certain holes where you're going to see some guys hitting driver and you're going to see some guys hitting like 5 or 6 iron. Yeah. Like there are a lot of different options in terms of like how the course fits your eye based on what you choose to do. Right. So I think for Sawgrass, it's basically just like picking and finding the strategy that makes the most sense to you over time. And that's why I think like it is a difficult course to predict course history, because you can't just, it's not one of those courses like Pebble Beach where, you know, Jordan Spieth can just show up every single year. Doesn't really matter whether he's in good form or bad form, and he can finish in the top 10 just because it's him and it's Pebble Beach.
Right.
You can't do that at TPC Sawgrass. There's too many hazards and water that will expose you. Like water comes into play on 17 different holes, but it still has the 7th highest correlation between course history and success at this course, because it is such a strategic and nuanced course where like if you have your strategy and you figure out a specific strategy of what you want to do at TPC Sawgrass, and you start to say on some of these tee shots, like, okay, I am going to hit driver on this hole no matter what. Like that is just my strategy. That is the play. Like once you can start to develop some of those relationships between yourself and the strategy at this course, like I think those are the guys that are going to have the most benefit. So yeah, I like that idea of looking at maybe more so course history and how guys have performed off the tee, especially if there's more of a penalty for missing the fairway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, speaking to that, you know, because there is a lot of volatility at this tournament, sometimes there isn't necessarily a specific type a profile player that can do well here. I mean, like there's been examples of like Bryson DeChambeau up at the top of the leaderboard, and then Brian Harman is close, you know, on his heels, two different players. So is there a particular profile you actually are targeting early in the week, or are you using like some other sort of metrics to kind of figure out like, you know, to break ties, or are you just gravitating towards, you know, a particular angle this week?
Well, I don't know if I have like a specific angle. I think the one thing at TPC Sawgrass is I'm looking for a lot of balance, right? Like this is a shot maker's course. This is a ball striker's course. This is a course where, again, like there are certain players that probably just don't like it here, yeah. Right? Because one thing about Pete Dye, and I've had my issues with Pete Dye, I'm not the biggest fan of his in general, but I think one thing that he does really, really well is he's good at like visually tricking players, right? So I'm sure you can definitely speak to this, Capper, yeah. But like, yes. I remember last time I played a Pete Dye course, it was the one up by Whistling Straits. I was up there for the Ryder Cup, and I'm forgetting the name of it, but Whistling Straits has like kind of a resort up there, and there's another Pete Dye course. And I remember thinking when I played the course, like, oh, like your eyes naturally go this way on a hole, but that is clearly not what you should do, right? Like, right. He's really good at making your eyes or making you think you should hit the ball in a certain place, whereas that's exactly the opposite of what you should do. So to be honest with you, pretty simple formula. Like I'm looking for guys that are in really good form right now, because I think recent form is obviously the great equalizer when you get to courses that have a lot of tricks and nuances to them. And yeah, I think course history matters some. I think driving accuracy, as you mentioned, matters some a lot, Steve. And obviously wedge play is pretty important. Again, I think one of the reasons why this is one of Pete Dye's better courses, one of the things I like about TPC Sawgrass is that it doesn't really the proximity buckets are really spread out, right? It's not a specific wedge course or a mid iron course or a long iron course. It's a course that's asking you to hit pretty much every single club in your bag. And that's why I think like looking at overall iron play in general is probably a better way to go about it than kind of specifically picking out wedge players or long iron players. But yeah, kind of like a balanced mix for me this week. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of that proximity thing, we talked about it last night, that it's actually not sticky either. If you go back through the years, you know, some years it's actually hit more heavily weighted to like 125, 150. Like last year, I think it was more weighted to like 150, 175. It fluctuates around. So, I mean, I did use a little wider bucket, but like kind of like you, I kind of looked just shorter to middle irons this year. Because it just seems like just looking at the profile players, like your proper, just no nonsense vanilla ball strikers, they all seem like they're pretty good from like 125 to 200. Sure. Those are the types of guys just generally do pretty well here. So it's a bigger range, but you know, it helped me kind of break some ties a little bit. But kind of like you, I kind of went a little bit more feel, you know, looking at course history. I definitely like, I watch a lot of videos, you know, Golf Digest.
Knowing really up has some good ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I put that in my column this week. Actually, I watched one with Matt Every, and he actually said two things that were pretty, you know, interesting. So first one, he doesn't like starting on number 10, which is funny because the first round leader lean, apparently, it's 10 in the morning. So
10 in the morning.
Yes. Yeah, so Matt Every, maybe, not the most reliable source. He also mentioned that, you know, he said that TPC Sawgrass is a nightmare for guys who like to fade the ball. And his rationale was, you know, on any holes that basically is, you know, ask for a left or right tee shot, there's not much adversity to the right of the tee box there. So if you really do want to hit a draw, you can do it. Anything that is right to left, though, there's usually a wall of trees or just something over to the left side that if you miss left, and that's the one thing you can't do as far as you can't miss left here. It just, you're really in trouble. So, you know, you think about it, like, you know, Rory, when he won 2019, like he was still, you know, still hitting that, you know, padded draw there. You know, Justin Thomas was basically hitting duck hooks when he won. Cam Smith was hitting a lot of draws too. And you think about some popular faders, Dustin Johnson, like he's had some good finishes here, but I can't ever remember him ever contending. Brooks Koepka hasn't really had a lot of success there. Like, so it actually might make sense. I mean, it's hard to play that game of just like, all right, who's a fader, who's a drawer? Cause these are great professional golfers. You can probably ask Colin Morikawa to hit a draw. He can. But, you know, I think we kind of know the types. We know, generally speaking, who likes to fade the ball, who likes to draw the ball. And, you know, that's kind of like using a little bit more feel with that and, you know, taking a little guess. Hopefully I'm right on it. Just using that, like, again, like a balanced approach. If I'm seeing that, you know, something you're usually really good at and you've been struggling with it, I feel like with Sawgrass, you can't just bring your B-minus game throughout the whole tournament. That's going to turn to a D game very quickly. So just stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, did you guys hear the Rom interview? Rom did an interview with No Laying Up a couple, it's probably maybe a couple months ago now, but one of the questions that they asked him is like, what is one hole on the PGA Tour that like gives you nightmares or doesn't fit your eye? And I don't actually remember what hole it was, but he was immediately like, named a hole at TPC Sawgrass. He probably was like, oh my God, I hate the way that this hole, like, it just does not fit my eye whatsoever. So
I would guess it's probably either 16 or number two, the par fives. Those are basically, you got to hit like a hook off the tee with the driver there. And just like he can hit it right to left pretty easily with like a long iron or a three wood, but like ask him to do it with a driver. Like that's no bueno.
Yeah, he has some difficult time turning it over sometimes. And I mean, he's coming off a week where he just lost over seven strokes.
Yeah.
Crazy. Off the tee.
Crazy. So. It had to be his worst performance, like fucking ever. Right?
Yeah.
It can't even be close. Like, it was unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about him. We'll talk about him.
We will. So, why don't we take a break and then let's get right into diving into the DFS tiers.
Let's do it. Well, listen, WinBet is the official online sports book of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. WinBet is active in a bunch of states, and there's tons of ways to win, including live betting and same-game parlays, a.k.a. win bets, build your own bet. March Madness is almost here, plus plenty of ways of getting down on the NBA, NHL, and XFL. Sign up today to receive a special offer. You bet $100, you get $100. That's limited to state availability. And of course, for our DGens only, if you hit the biggest long shot parlay of the week, you get $1,000 in free credit. There's so much to choose from. And all you got to do is head over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/winbet so they know that we sent you. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WINNBET. Offer is subject to change. Terms and conditions, winbet.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough Winbet is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
Okay. All right. Why don't we go right to the $10,000 range? So, Andy, why don't I start with you? So, I mean, listen, all these players are extremely good. We can go over all the particular details of why they're good. But, you know, you've done a lot of great work over at Rick Run Good. You know, actually not just talking about the types of players to pick, but like the theory around DFS, because it's a game within the game. So, you know, talk about a little bit the guys about $10,000. Where do you, it's early, but where do you kind of get a sense that maybe, you know, the market might be going this week as far as, you know, like where do you think ownership is going to fall about $10,000?
Good question. I've been thinking about this because I knew we were going to talk about this. I do think Rom will be underowned because he is so expensive and he left such a bad taste in people's mouth that I think people are going, people have a difficult time paying 11.8K to begin with. So imagine paying 11.8K for a guy that they just watched spray the ball all over the place and absolutely crater from the front page. Like, think about the way that Rom did it last week. If Rom like kind of started out slow and kind of, you know, it just like wasn't really his week, but then, you know, by the end of the day, they show him on coverage like holing out for 73 to think about like the way that he did it.
Right.
I think is going to put a lot more people off of him because he did it in such traumatic fashion where on Thursday afternoon, everyone, we were all sitting here saying like, what the fuck? He's going to do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
This is unbelievable.
This is a nightmare. Make it stop.
It's a nightmare. And then, and then I woke up on Friday morning and he was like completely irrelevant in the tournament. So I do think that Rom will be underowned. I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts. Scheffler's always underowned. Like, people just don't like playing Scottie Scheffler. I literally cannot think of a time where Scottie Scheffler was like overwhelming chalk.
Yeah.
So my guess is that it ends up being Rory and Xander, and not like Xander, you know, left the best taste in people's mouths either last week. Like he was kind of playing well and then kind of played like shit over the weekend. So if I had to make a guess, I would probably say Rory ends up being the highest owned in this range. What about you guys?
I think that's right. Like you said, Scotty's always underowned, and exactly what you said, the fashion in which Rom flamed out was so just like
combined with like, the price. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, like, just, like yeah. Nope, I don't need that. Yep. I don't need that stress. I'll go ahead and take Rory. Rory's one here. He just came in second. Like everybody likes to play Rory. So yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably get a pretty good discount on Rom. The question is, do you want to trust Rom again? Right. Mm. So like going into last weekend, I noticed the week before that he was going left a lot off the driver. It made me very uncomfortable picking him last week. And so if he goes left off the box again here, I mean, he's going to be in a fucking world of hurt.
Yeah.
So,
well, I want to go to, I have an opinion on Rom, but I want to go to Steve first. Who do you think ends up being the highest owned?
I think it's Rory, clearly. Yeah. I mean, you can kind of pick nits with the other three here. I mean, Rom left a very bad taste in people's mouths and he's 11-8. Like you can tell that this pricing is old because I think that's probably about maybe $400, $500 too high if we were actually going to reset the pricing to this week based on what happened.
Yeah, and all of these weeks that Rom has been on this insane run, he hasn't been as high as 11.8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of these weeks, like he was 10.8, 11.1, 11.2, 11.3, 11.4. So not only are you getting him off like a heat check week, a bad week, but this is the highest that you've ever had to pay for him throughout this entire run.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, with Scotty, the course history hasn't been very good. You know, yeah, you can point to last year as an excuse. He was in the bad way, but even the prior 2 years wasn't very good. Seems like he doesn't really drive the ball very well here. His strokes getting off the tee numbers have not been very good. I mean, just conception. I think he's a fader off the tee. I think that's what he prefers. So if Matt Scheffler? Every is actually, yeah, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if Matt Every is correct that faders tend to have trouble here, that would make sense that his course history is kind of pretty bland, and he likes to fade the ball, so maybe it doesn't fit his eye. And then Xander, that's an interesting case to me because, I mean, he's got that second place finish here.
Yeah.
And then he's missed three straight cuts.
Yeah. Last year he did get boned by the weather last year.
So that's the thing. I think he was like three under heading into when it paused. He paused on 17 and then they came back on Sunday and it was just Saturday morning and it was just a complete disaster. I think all three guys actually hit it in the water in his group.
Was he in the, it was like him, Brooks, and
somebody, it might have been Scotty. I think all three guys hit in the water there. So, but Xander was doing very well at that tournament. And then in the COVID year, I think he hit the ball very good in that first round, but he didn't putt very well. So it's hard with him because, I mean, on paper, you got three straight missed cuts. There might be a little bit of context to it. He didn't play all that great last week. I mean, he was pretty good through two rounds. And then it just seemed like over the weekend, on Saturday, just couldn't get anything going. Sunday, I don't know what happened in the back nine. I kind of just unstarred him at that point. But I can almost see actually maybe him going a little bit lower ownership because I think people might look at the three straight missed cuts and not really look at the context there.
Yeah, look at the guys below him too. Well, you got Homa, who's going to be uber popular. So I think people will definitely skip over Xander. Even though Xander always picks up late, sneaky ownership, but I don't think it's going to be enough to move him. Not close to the chalk.
I think when he finished like second, he drove the ball really well. He drove the ball really well in the COVID year. He was driving the ball very well until, the winds kicked up. In his missed cuts year, he didn't drive the ball. So it's been a little up and down with him, but, I'm intrigued by him. I don't know exactly if I'm going to have any bets on him. I'm not really sure about DFS ownership right now, but I'm intrigued. I actually kind of like Rahm though. I think it's roster construction for me. I'm not really in love with anybody in the nines, to be completely honest. I like a lot of guys in the eights, so I feel like I can go to 11-8 with Rahm and then just go right down to a lot of guys I really like in the eights. I talked about it earlier in the show how he's done a good job with his long irons and his three woods being able to hit the ball right to left. He had a lot of really good shots, so maybe he can lean a little bit more on that. His overall strokes gained off the tee numbers of Saugus have been really good. I mean, obviously, you look at the proximity numbers or his success on overseeded tracks. If this is a situation where the higher rough maybe leads to a lower green regulation rate overall, or if the greens are, Capri, you said that the greens, when you played on our local course, very firm. The greens are pretty firm and balls coming out of the rough there, you're going to get some flyer lies. He's really good around the green. So I don't mind actually going to 11-8 and then maybe skipping the nines and going to the $8,000 range. And I think based on the fact that, he was in final group in 2019, I think he finished top 10 either in 2021 or 2022. So a lot of success here. I think he can maybe learn from last week. Maybe make some adjustments. We're saying, okay, instead of maybe taking a driver on this hole, maybe I just lay back a little bit because I know I have an automatic shot that I've been working on, that I can hit a nice draw. And then, he can lean on, any of the holes where it does fit his eye with a driver, hit that fade. And then he does a really good job hitting a draw with his irons. That's really important at Pete Dye Golf Course, being able to hit the ball both ways on the same hole. So if Rahm is going to have a little bit of an ownership discount, I kind of actually like it for roster construction based on some other guys I like this week.
Like it. So you don't like anybody in the nines.
I have concerns and questions and that I want to talk about with Andy on a bunch of stuff. And I know we tried to keep it under an hour. We are definitely not on pace for under an hour.
Well, let's talk about the nines. Let's talk about the nines. I don't have anything more to say about the tens. I think if you're asking me to choose somebody, I'd probably choose Xander, but I could see myself fading everyone in the tens. I definitely probably am a lot higher on the 9K range than you are.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about Patrick Cantlay because I can already make the case for Cantlay because I made the same case last year and it blew up in my face. So good form coming in. Obviously, he checks all the boxes with the stat sheet. I mean, good at the stadium course at PGA West, good at Harbortown, good at TBC River Highlands. You got the Pete Dye, connections there. But that's translating to three missed cuts. And I feel like I'm sitting in deja vu here. So what's different, I guess, this time around with Cantlay is, and like I understand the arguments for him. I made the arguments last year. Is this going to be different for him this time around, or is Chalk Cantlay and steamed up to 16-1? Is that going to blow up in people's faces again at TPC Sawgrass?
Well, I wasn't planning on playing Cantlay. I mean, I'm still not sold. There's this thing with there's three players: Xander, Cantlay, and Tony Finau that I don't know if I will ever trust on Bermuda. Like, fully trust on Bermuda. Even though all three of them have done certain things recently to kind of disprove that and debunk that myth, you know, Xander's probably the one that I feel the best about on Bermuda of the three because he's had so much success at Eastlake. But you've even started to see Finau start to pile up some good results on Bermuda. He won the Houston Open in the fall. He finished top five in Memphis. And Cantlay is still the one where I'm like, Cantlay in Florida, and I know he just finished top five at the API, and he's playing great golf, but there's something about him on Bermuda where I don't know if I'll ever be sold, and I just don't, like, my eyes weren't drawn to him this week. My eyes are drawn to Cantlay when we get to the Northeast on bent grass. Like, I don't personally feel like a strong affection for Cantlay this week, especially if he's going to be super popular. But is that why you've brought him up first? Because you're seeing that he gets the most ownership in this range? Because I was actually thinking it was going to be Homa, because I think people have just developed this love affair with Homa because so many guys have been on his outright wins. He's developed this super high floor. Not that Cantlay has it, but Homa is just like, even his bad weeks, it feels like he's an automatic T25. So I could see a lot of guys going Homa Cantlay to start, like, and fading the 10K Rage and having that be a start.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I could definitely see Homa. And for all the reasons that you said, plus, like you said, like, they hit so many outrights with him. He engages with the golf. With the golf internet. So it's you don't think JT is going to get the most steam at this price?
No, I do think JT will be popular 100%. Yeah. Like I absolutely do. My favorite in this range is Finau. I really actually like Finau this week. I don't think there's going to be room for him on my betting card. I did bet JT. I got a 22-1 on JT. But I've had a bit of a problem with JT recently where I'm just like, he seems like the elite to me that has, I know this is crazy saying about a guy with 15 wins and two majors, but to me, it feels like JT is almost the elite with the most to prove right now, because all these guys have been racking up wins. I mean, Rahm, Rory, Scheffler, like, Homa, Cantlay, Finau, like, all these guys have been winning a lot. JT's won twice in the last 2 years, and I know there were big wins. I know they were at the Players and the PGA Championship, but this is a guy that won 15 times on the PGA Tour before his 27th birthday, and since then has, like, objectively, like, his iron play has not been at JT levels for like 6 months now.
Yeah.
So I have it in my head that this is like, okay, this is JT's time. This is JT's time. But I don't know. Do you think, I don't know, Capper, I didn't spend any time on Twitter this morning. So what are people saying?
Yeah. So I didn't spend too much cause I was golfing today, but when I was in the cart, I was scrolling through, but I just thought at his price, like, you see JT, it's a good price, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a, like, oh man, what a price discount I'm getting on JT. And, you know, one here, he's on TV a lot. I mean, he didn't do much over the weekend. I haven't dug in to what happened. Was it his irons again, or was it his putting again? Like, that's the only thing about JT. Like,
he hit the ball really well last week, but it was his It was short game and putting, I think, was the worst part of his game.
So as somebody who had a JT ticket and bid on that 30-1 and woke up on Sunday morning thinking, you know what? It's time. Seeing him miss every single putt on Saturday, see him hit the ball great. Yeah. Everything fell apart on Sunday.
So would you go back to him after tracking him? Because like he wasn't on my radar last week. Like I didn't track him very closely, but like, would you go back to him, Steve?
Something is off. I think you kind of mentioned like that killer, like that was primed for him. Like he hit the ball. So he was grinding on Saturday. Like the putts were not going in, but he was hitting the ball so good in pretty difficult conditions. And he was only, you know, he bogeyed the last hole, but he was only four back. I mean, you know, he got Kitayama at four under, you know, and it was going to be kind of calmer wind conditions on Sunday. I was like, all right, you know what? Maybe get the putter rolling, hit the ball just as good. This is going to be JT's time. And he was just bad from the jump. It seems like just something isn't really firing. Now, am I a week too early? Possibly. Maybe this is the time to go back to him.
It's a good golf course for him. Like this is a golf course that fits his eye.
It really is. I mean, obviously with the win, he's got a top five here. I mean, some strong, you know, results in Florida just overall.
He said that round where it was super windy was like one of the most fun rounds he's had in his entire, this golf course is like JT's wet dream because he loves, and Bones is wet dream shots. Too, because he loves shaping shots. Yeah, and Sawgrass is so good. It's such a, like, it is a, yes, it's target golf, but it's target golf in the sense of like the way that you get to your target involves a lot of strategy and is very interesting. So I don't know. I think there's like a potential love affair with JT on this golf course brewing where he's just going to be good here for years.
Yeah. Yeah. I if you remember when he won, it was the same thing, right? On Sunday on that front nine, he could not fucking, he could not putt at all. And he kept missing and then dropped it on 10 and then just went fucking hard on the back nine. And like,
hitting like provocative golf shots, like 30 yard, like duck hooks off the tee that barely left the ground, like little sawed off cuts. Like that shit is JT's wet dream. Like I couldn't help myself. 22-1. He's, you know, I have a friend in Vegas right now that just asked me if I wanted a piece of 26-1. Circa has for him at the Masters.
Oh,
that's 26-1 at JT number. On JT for the Masters.
Yeah, we were. I know we were both fucking high on him last year, and he failed us last year. So maybe we were a year too early because I think I single bulleted fucking JT.
Yeah, I bet JT at the Masters every single year, and he always disappoints me. And I was planning on not, like, I picked Rom to win the Masters in all of my December preview stuff, and I was planning on, you know, just fuck it, single bullet Rom this year. Like, what, the Masters is often won by the guy that has been playing. Like, we saw it with Scheffler last year. Like, I always say to myself after the Masters, like, dummy, you overthought this one. Like, it's often won by the guy who has shown you the most throughout the PGA Tour season, which was the case with Scheffler last year. And so I was thinking, like, I'm just going to bet Rom, but like, I don't know, 26-1 on JT.
It's a good number.
I mean, there's been some, I mean, not to divert this into a Masters podcast, I mean, like, Hideki kind of came out of nowhere. Patrick Reed was kind of out of nowhere. So, you know, no, I mean,
it's not every year 100%, but I always feel like at the Masters, not necessarily if it's like even in the outright market, but just with like DFS too, I always feel like I always overthink it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that I think you wouldn't be doing golf gambling if you didn't overthink things. I do it all the time. Cameron does it all the time. I come up with very galaxy brain takes, which I'm probably about to make some, you know, in the $8,000 range. So
let's talk about the eights.
There we go. All right. So I think this is a very interesting range. I mean, there's a lot of, I think, very popular golfers down here. I mean, obviously with Hatton, you know, based on what he did at Bay Hill, some success in Florida golf, I could see him drive ownership. Hovland, that was a very tough scene going down the back nine.
Were you guys on him?
No, I wasn't.
I was not.
Oh my God, guys. 16 Oh my god, that's tough.
That was tough.
I was oh my god, this freaking guy, and I went back to him this week because I just like I just I think he is a magician with his ball striking right now, and he is like the dude gained 14 strokes ball striking at Sawgrass last year.
Yeah, he did
14 strokes ball striking.
Well, I remember so, Williams pretty good. Well, I remember you came on the show last year, and I agreed with you. We're like, listen, like he sucks around the green. Like last week at Bay Hill, no one was getting up and down. That's going to matter here, and then it just didn't end up mattering. I mean, I think it mattered.
Well, I also thought he was like too stupid for Pete Dye courses.
Yes, that's where the take came from.
Yeah. That's right.
There it is. So, but no, I mean, like that shot on 16 and then plugging in the bunker on 8 was just that was brutal.
And then just such like a sloppy 3-putt bogey to like kill you in one and done, like with the money. Yeah. Just such a sloppy to like, not like, God damn, he did not deserve a 10th place finish after how relevant he was in that golf tournament.
He was. That was a tough scene. So in the $8,000 range, I guess, you know, who are maybe a couple of guys you see that might be low owned that might be a decent pivot this week?
Well, Hideki's going to be like 2%, guys. But I mean, like, is he hurt? Like, I bet him last week and, you know, I played him last week in DraftKings and I actually wrote him up and like endorsed him in one of my articles. And he actually played pretty well on Thursday, but played like shit on Friday. So I'm like scared to go back to him. But to me, that's the obvious pivot. Right.
Yeah, but is it a pivot just a pivot, or do you actually think it's a good pivot?
Right. You know what I mean? Well, that's the question too. Yeah. But like, I want to start with the opposite direction before I determine pivots. Who do you guys think is the most popular in this range?
Hatton.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of Jason Day and Lowry love this week too, right?
Oh, like Day. I thought
betting Jason Day and Lowry. You know who I really like this week, who I bet, guys? Why not Zalatoris at this golf course?
I also am on Zalatoris. And let me make it around.
35 to 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why not Zalatoris?
Everybody was
everyone's favorite. And I feel like he's been, I asked Kirshner, I was like, are you betting Zalatoris? And like, I don't know what's up with people just like off him right now for some reason. Cause I bet him last week too. And he was super popular last week. And listen, like, I know he finished 50th, but he still hit the ball pretty well. It's not like he didn't, like, he was fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think just maybe with the model people, the iron game since he's come back from the injuries haven't been Zalatoris levels. Like, we've seen glimpses, like at Riviera, he was great, but there's been some clunkers. Like last week, he hit the ball, I think, with his irons okay. They weren't like Zalatoris levels. Off the tee, he's been really good, which is actually
really good
because of the back injury. It's encouraging. Why I like him, though, is, I mean, you think about last year. You know, like, I think he finished what, like 27th or
26th,
so, but he was, but he was three back going into the final round. And that was a weird, like, Monday finish anyways. He was right there, solid top 30 finish back in, I think, when he first played this. You know, if he can win TPC Southwind, I don't really see a whole lot of difference between that place and this place as far as like plotter, everything right in front of you, a lot of water, you know, won that track there. So I really like Zalatoris this week. I'm not sure about the DFS ownership, but that's a guy who, like, I'm looking, he's driven it really well at Sawgrass, really, really good at both Sawgrass and some other Pete Dye golf courses I looked at, some good at some other, like, Florida, like, other similar tracks I looked at as well. I really like Zalatoris this week, for sure.
Do you guys think Spieth is going to be popular coming off last week?
I think people are going to be scared of that back tweak, right? I mean, I think that'll spook enough people where he won't be mega chalk with it, because they were talking about it on the broadcast. And then, you know how it goes. It just snowballs, you know, like, Decky.
Yeah. Who do you guys prefer, Spieth or Fitzpatrick or Cameron Young of that, like, middle tier?
I kind of like all three, to be completely honest.
You do? I kind of like Fitzpatrick the most, I think.
I can make a case, I think, for all three.
I worry about Cameron Young's accuracy. He still is not the most accurate guy, even on these club down courses. Like, I don't know if I trust him to keep the ball and play off the tee.
So, I mean, think about what Cam Young has done. I mean, he finished what, top five at Harbortown. So
that's a good point. That's
you can
a good
do point. It.
Yeah.
I actually look back last year. He was 3 under before the weather started to go downhill in the first round. He was in the bad wave. He was 3 under before the weather started to go downhill. He's actually hitting a lot of fairways. You know, he was actually driving pretty well. And then just the weather just blew him out to sea. You know, I was concerned last week about him because his short game was just really, really bad. And his putting has been also bad. I thought that was kind of a bad combo for Ben Hill.
I bet him last week. He had every right to be in that tournament. And he never made that move. He was like right there. He was in the top 10 for the entire tournament, but like never really made that move.
Yeah, I noticed he passed the eye test with his short game. I thought his short game was really improved last week compared to when he was doing some other tournaments leading up here. So if that's shored up, the ball striking has been really good. I've seen him at least club down on certain places where that's necessary. I actually don't mind Cam Young this week. I mean, Fitzpatrick, I think you can make the obvious case, you know, good history here. Finally hit his irons pretty good. Maybe he's finally shaken off the neck injury. Some decent finishes at Sawgrass and Florida in general. You know, he just one bad round on Saturday. Otherwise, he was okay on Sunday. Really good through the first two rounds. You know, he carried that momentum. And then, you know, with Spieth, obviously with the back injury, that can be a little concerning. The history at Sawgrass, ever since that fourth place finish way back in 2014, I think it's just been pretty disastrous. Overall, though, he's actually hit it pretty okay off the tee. So I think off the, you know, at least, you know, visually off the tee, he's okay there. That's been a concern with Spieth, you know, recently, just as far as how squirrely he can be sometimes. And then with the putter, look, I mean, like JT lost strokes putting and won this thing. And if he's having a bad week off the tee, I mean, Cam Smith even, you know, lost was really bad off the tee. And he just, I don't know. Like, it seems like ever since they moved it to March and they had the overseed, like those Sundays, like one guy just caught fire on Sunday. And I can see Spieth kind of carrying momentum from last week into this week, even if he isn't really perfect for everything I'm looking for this week.
What about you, Capper? I feel like me and Steve are the ones giving all the opinions. I want more opinions out of Capper.
So I'm never Fitzpatrick ever. And especially coming off his neck injury. I can't get there. I just can't. It's just a personality thing with me, and I know it's fucking stupid because it has nothing to do with his personality. But
it is fucking stupid.
Yeah, listen, I know. I'm aware. And listen.
So, what did you think of the Netflix episode? Did you watch it?
I fucking hated it. I hated it. It's the one thing
I didn't think it was a good episode.
It wasn't a good episode, and then on top of that, it was the one outcome I did not want because of that stupid narrative that was going on that week. He won here as an amateur. He's definitely going to win, and it fucking came true. And I'm still on.
I'm podcasting with his best friend tomorrow morning, Rappaport.
So. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So I'm never Fitzpatrick. I think Young is good, man. Like we talked about how everybody was on Will Z. We've been waiting for Cam Young to win. Like why can't he win here? Like you said, like his around the green has improved. If he can get a hot putter, he's. I don't know what he does with the clubbing down, though. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, but he plays weird courses well. I mean, he could have won the fucking British Open, which is a weird course, right?
The Harbortown point that Steve brought up makes me feel a lot better because I had wiped that away from my memory, but that one makes me feel a lot better. And then the only other guy to talk about is Tom Kim, who, you know, I think is a really, really good course fit. Like, this is a really good course for Tom Kim. I think he has a way better chance to win the Players than he does at any major this year. But I just don't love first-timers here. And I'd rather play Lowry or Hatton.
I think the answer, because Tom Kim, I think, is pretty popular this week. He's in push because the narrative, oh, he's really accurate. He won at Wyndham. So,
and
I mean, maybe people are trying
Wyndham
to
as a comp. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe people are trying to say, oh, well, you know, 20-year-old South Korean Siwoo did it. Why can't Tom Kim do it? So I'm going to say a little bit of word of caution about Tom Kim for two reasons. Number one, you don't, even though, yes, he's really accurate off the tee, just because of how visually weird it is at TPC Sawgrass, like you mentioned, like, you know, Pete Dye, you know, play tricks.
It could fool him.
It might not translate well here. So, I mean, like a guy like Morikawa, it's never really translated here, and he hits a lot of fairways. Just it might not suit his eye. So there's that point. And number two, if it is a situation where the rough is actually up and it's difficult to get out of, a guy that's that short, you know, with not as much of that speed, like Tom Kim, that might give him some issues.
The only reason why I have more confidence in Tom Kim is because he has Fowler's caddy, who was Fowler's caddy when Fowler won here.
That is true. So I mean, on paper, he hit the ball relatively fine last week. I understand it. I mean, but it's kind of like the out of the box thinking. That's probably galaxy brain myself away from Tom Kim, who might end up doing well, and I'll have nothing on him. So,
all right, that's all I got in the eights.
All right, but other than that, I mean, like, just kind of put a bow on it. Like, I like a lot of guys in this range, from Hovland to Lowry to Hatton. I think the only guys I'm not on is probably Tom Kim, just because of the first-timer thing. Hideki, I'm not convinced he's healthy. I understand it's a pivot here. Like, his driving distances have been way down, and to me, that seems like something is amiss. Like, he's, like, compensating for something. Because it's almost like off the tee's been like Russell Henley, which is... I don't think very desirable for Hideki as far as like trying to have that. So, but we'll see. I mean, this is a course he could club down. Distance isn't the biggest factor here. Maybe that could wake him up.
Yeah.
So, all right. Why don't we take another break and then we'll keep breaking down the DFS series.
Finish it up.
Yes.
Yep. That is all right. So,
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We are also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Is your home for off-season NFL best ball drafts. And they also got you covered in a ton of other daily games, including NBA, NHL, and PGA. Underdog Fantasy is a great way to get down on your favorite player props. If they're not available in your state, head over to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for 100% deposit bonus up to $100. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN.
Okay. And then, you know, we're going to talk about Piper golf balls right now. So, look, I mean, you're in my neck of the woods right now. We just got a nice, fresh coat of snow. Andy, Oak Hill was blanketed with snow for the last couple of weeks here.
Going up there in a couple of weeks for new member orientation.
Oh, very good.
So we'll have to connect. So I'll hit you up. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me know. And then we'll have to, we'll connect there. So anyway, I mean, I'm going to the store right now. Golf season is hopefully about a month away for me. I got to get new golf balls. And obviously I like to gravitate towards the premium balls, like your Pro V ones, your TaylorMade's. Well, why do that when you can get a discounted golf ball that performs just as good as the top line golf balls? And that's Piper golf balls. They have a full line of golf balls that matches your handicap. The premium ball is a gold ball. That's for scratch handicappers all the way up to a 7. It's a 4-piece urethane golf ball that has really good spin rates around the green to help you control, getting close to the pin. And that's a real quick way to get to lower your scores is getting your around the green game under control. So go to Piper .golf/GGP. You can get 50% off any shipments over $50. That's piper.golf/GGP and improve your game today.
Nice. All right. So let's talk about some of the fucking chalk in the 7K range and if we think it's good or bad chalk. So Keegan's going to be fucking Uber owned. What do you think? So I love Keegan, so I'm completely biased, but I mean, he had a bad round and he looked like he figured it out on Sunday again.
I like Keegan. I bet Keegan. I didn't want to do this coming on your show this week because I feel like you pumped way too much air into this guy's tires already. But I like Keegan a lot, and I bet him at 50-1. I love the way that he's hitting the ball right now. He has really good course history. I think that he has the type of very well-rounded iron play that should help him succeed on this course. I trust him to keep the ball in play off the tee. I think it's 50-1 is like, I know there were some guys that got 70s and 80s that I would have loved, but I bet a 50. And if he's going to be uber popular, then I'll just probably stay away from him. And why is Tiger Woods in the pricing. Dude,
think a burger in here too. Like,
yeah, I don't understand that at all. But like, you so okay. So this is good for me to know because I knew that people would be betting him because I don't bet Keegan a ton. That I knew that if I was attracted to betting him, that people would bet him. But he's probably, you think he's the highest owned in the 7K range?
Yeah, probably him or Corey Connors, maybe.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. You know, I think you guys are probably right. I don't know if there's anyone else I would have thrown into that mix in terms of popularity. Like, Ricky's probably going to get some ownership. Like, Sahith Theegala, like, shouldn't he get some ownership? The guy is playing, like, really good golf. He never rates out well for me for some reason, and I do not trust him to keep the ball in play off the tee at this golf course. But, like, the only other guys that I would have mentioned in terms of ownership, I would think that Keith Mitchell and Sahith would both be pretty popular here.
So that's an interesting point you mentioned, because I think Sahith, it doesn't ever seem like he's all that popular. Sometimes, I mean, I think he's popular like with the golf gambling communities, but like, as far as like ownership, and I think you make an interesting point where he doesn't ever rate well in your models or anybody's models because like his bad performances are bad. So bad, but his really good ones are really good and they kind of offset each other. So if you're running like a last 50 rounds, last 24 rounds, he's going to have some absolute clunkers in there. So, but overall though, I mean, he's been playing so solid. His iron game's been really good. Like, and some other courses where like, I think we've talked about where, you know, he can't drive it really poorly. He still has had success. I mean, he almost won at TPC River Highlands, Sea Island. He finished second there. I wouldn't think of that as a Sahith Theegala golf course, you know, did well there. I mean, Farmers didn't drive the ball very well over the weekend, still finished T4. So it could, maybe this is a situation where if this is a golf course where he's not relying as much on his driver, maybe he can keep that under control. And I think Datagolf actually put out an article that his big miss is to the right. Okay. And so if that's his big miss, if he just doesn't do it on the holes where there's water right, which there aren't, you know, many, I think, you know, I can only think of nine where there's water on the right side of the hole. I could see him maybe doing well and maybe, you know, create some electricity on over the weekend at Sawgrass.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're right about his DFS ownership, though. It's because he's so squirrely off the tee. He's like so untrustworthy. It's just it's an uncomfortable selection.
Yeah. Do you guys think, you know, who my favorite play in the sevens is? Honestly, I mean,
Tommy Fleetwood.
Ownership dependent. No, but I like Tommy Fleetwood. Do you guys think Siwoo is going to be popular this week?
I think so.
Yeah, you do.
He'll get the Mayo bump, right? He'll get the Mayo bump.
Yeah, so. He's got the Mayo bump. I mean, obviously, like,
I like Pete Dye, good, week.
You know, winner here, winner at Stadium Course, winner at Wyndham.
What's not to like, I guess? You're right.
Seriously. Yeah.
I mean, his iron play hasn't been all that good, but he still has okay finishes the last, like, you know, three front, you know, tournaments or so. But
okay.
You
know, I'll just really pivot to Billy Horschel. I think Horschel is actually a decent pivot. You think so? He practices here. This is course.
I'm not saying it's a. I think that's a. It's a pivot. I just
Play Billy.
I'm just saying it's been ugly, man. Yeah, and someone's been on Billy a couple times this year. It's been bad.
Yeah, no one's gonna play him. But I think he lives there. You see him at the grocery store ever, Capper? Like, I'm pretty sure he practices as far.
Yeah, he does. So yeah, so it's funny. He's a guy who when I'm out in like Ponte Vedra. If I'm like going out or whatever, I'm like, I wonder if I'm going to run into Billy Horschel or which random golf I can see out today.
I feel like Horschel right now is like in like Kevin Kisner zone where like just everything kind of looks horrible, but you're like, all right, you're going to move back to a golf course that, you know, kind of fits you theoretically.
Quite bad at the Honda Classic.
I bet him instead. I had a choice between Chris Kirk and Billy, and I picked Billy, and I felt really good after the first round. Not so great on Sunday. Good job, Steve.
Yeah. Who else, Capper, is part of Ponte Vedra Mafia? It's like Billy. It used to be Cam Smith.
Used to be Cam Smith. Russell Knox lives here. Some of the guys who won't be playing.
The No Laying Up guys live there.
Yeah. That's, I don't follow them as closely as Steve does. I don't really know.
I think Jim Furyk is a Ponte Vedra.
Yeah, Furyk's here. Doc Redman lives here. Jonas Blix, like guys who aren't playing. But there's a shit ton of guys who live in Ponte Vedra. Like it's all right. It's nice.
All right. Any other? I got an ugly name. This is kind of maybe like a joke, but the Ponzi scheme himself, Cam Davis, five straight missed cuts now.
Jesus Christ,
He just missed the cut on the number though. He's getting better. Yeah. So, Andy, let me ask you. I'm actually playing you this week in a season-long fantasy. Should I drop Cam Davis? Is it time?
No, don't drop him. But, like, I have gotten so many angry messages about Cam Davis because I just, like, keep writing him up. Like, I can't get away with publicly saying that I'm going to play him anymore or advising anyone to play him. Like, obviously, I am going to play him. But, like, I can't endorse playing him.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm between a rock and a hard place with Cam Davis. But, yeah, I mean, I talked about this earlier, but I don't think I've ever been more wrong about a sports situation in my entire life gambling than I have been on Cam Davis over, like, this four-week stretch. Because at the beginning, now he's at least, like, missing cuts on the number. The first two cuts that he missed, by like a combined 17 strokes. Yeah, and I wrote him up both times. So, anyway,
what do you think about Burns? The state of his game? You think he's broken or like what's going on?
I've never been a huge Burns guy. So I'd never bet him when he was even playing well. So
yeah.
I just don't have a ton of interest. If we're talking high sevens, probably would rather go Fleetwood.
Yeah. Well, he's got a great course history here. He's been first round leader twice. He liked it here. So,
I mean, I think I'd rather go Fleetwood, Scott, Tagala, even maybe Justin Rose, because it seems like every time people write him off, I know it's two straight missed cuts, but like he ends up just popping up for first round leader kind of out of nowhere. So, you know, he's been pretty good here. And obviously, one month ago, the form is kind of still there, unless he's just mailing it in because he knows he's on the Ryder Cup team now. But, you know, I mean, I don't think he's going to draw a lot of popularity considering he's been pretty bad the last 2 weeks, but that might not be terrible. I'd rather have him than Burns right now, which is crazy. I mean, like you can make the case for it just because, I mean, he was 36 hole leader last year. He was relevant at the stadium course at PJ West. So, you know, good at Valspar, good Florida history, but man, it really is just really bad right now. Like it seems like he doesn't know where the tee ball's going, and the iron play has been just horrific.
Do you guys think there's going to be any mega chalk in the low sevens? Because I think there is.
Oh, who do you think?
Ben Griffin. Ben Griffin's like ninth in my model this week. Like everybody's going to play Ben Griffin.
I think it's
going to be mega chalk.
I was betting him top 40s through the fall and earlier this year. And now they've adjusted the price and I'm like, ugh, I can't justify paying like plus 105 on a top 40 for Ben Griffin.
Yeah. But, I really like Hadwin. I think I'd rather play Hadwin.
He's got a good course history here.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not coming in the greatest of four.
Hadwin and Smalley would be my guys in the low seven.
Strzok has been a little better lately, and he's okay at Sawgrass. And that's another guy who is pretty good at TPC Southwind. So that might be okay. But yeah, I think you're right on Griffin being popular. Yeah. I can see Hadwin drawing some ownership.
The last missed cut will help keep some ownership away from him.
Probably. So that's probably
so. Yeah. So the 6K, the mega chalk is Webb Simpson.
I have one more thing to say about the
second. Yeah, what you got?
Remember when everybody was talking about Taylor Montgomery as the second coming of Tiger Woods? And I was sitting here saying, you guys do realize that there's going to come a point where he's going to not gain 15 strokes putting every week. And what do you know? Here he is in his rightful place at 7,300.
Yeah, he's playing big boy golf courses now where he actually got to hit an iron shot. Yeah,
unbelievable. This guy was taken in like
well-deserved victory lap
fantasy drafts. Yeah. This guy was taken. Yeah, people were like, "Why do you have Taylor Montgomery?" Like, look at the guys he's surrounded by in price. Denny McCarthy, Matt Kuchar, Andrew Putnam. And I had him ranked around those guys in my season long ranking. People thought I was crazy.
And yet I think you auto drafted him in our little elite draft, though. I thought that was the biggest irony of them all.
I know, and I've actually been starting him, and like he is making cuts. But I'm surprised. I've actually kind of pulled it together in that league despite auto draft.
I have my typical like a fantasy football season where I think I'm second in points scored and I'm like 3-5. I won despite leaving Kirk Kitayama on my bench last week.
Been having some fun in that league trying to like grind out on the waiver wire because my team is worse than I think a lot of yours is, but I've been like grinding some good waiver wire moves.
I mean, you're really good for like the Hondas. Like your team, I was your team. I was like, I do not want to play you at like the 3M.
Because
all my guys are going to be gone, and you're going to have like Ben Griffin and like Robbie Shelton, like all the really good like graduates. You cleaned up there, so all right. Yes. Capper, how about like
so Webb Simpson, Megachalk, huh?
Like right now he's projecting at like 8-9%, and that's right now. So that's crazy. What's funny is because I brought him up last night, like, hey, did he find something? Because he made 6 birdies, you know, on the back nine of the Sunday. Good quote.
Yeah,
it's history here. Like, I don't know. He's definitely going to be huge. And then Vegas, he's even going to be more popular.
I love Vegas. Is he going to be super popular? Fuck.
Yeah, projected at 9%. Thanks,
because I really like Vegas this week. That's a bummer.
He's really good at Sawgrass, and his TDA numbers are really good. I mean, anytime you get it below 7, if you see a guy with course history and ball striking, that's like...
Yeah, I was going to bet him this week at like 220-1.
Yeah, Vegas. Why not? Fuck it. Yeah. That I fell in. That's how I got my addiction to Vegas, was at TPC when he drained that like fucking 85 footer on 17.
Yeah.
I was like, I love this fucking guy. And then I proceeded to waste a ton of money on him over the next couple of years. Vegas is going to be uber popular. Davis Riley, obviously coming off the top 10.
Underpriced. I wish they put out the pricing a little bit later. Yeah,
he'd be probably low 7s, I think, after last week, because people just love Davis Riley after what he did last year.
And then Ryder and Gim super dumpster dive. Gim.
Guys have any dumpster dives? I have one guy at 6,400 that I really like. But
what about the old guys, Franco Molinari or Danny Willett? Molinari, yes, though.
Yeah.
I think Willett's had 2 top 40s in a row. So
yeah, he's fine.
Okay.
anyone else for you, Capper, before I give my bomb?
Sure. So tell me if I'm crazy. I always play Fratelli here, right? I don't remember why.
As a Fratelli enthusiast, he's bad like 95% of the time. Like, you have to catch him on one good week, and it could be the players. Like, he's played well here before.
Yeah. I think maybe that's it.
He's a really good, like, fuck it GPP play. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he's like 140th out of 150 players in my model. So, he's gonna like finish like 8th at the Masters and then disappear for 2 years. But like,
that's accurate.
How about some Brandon Wu? Hit the ball pretty good and pretty accurate off the tee.
I was looking at another U, buddy.
Okay,
I have another U on my mind.
Go ahead.
Kevin Yu. Are you guys familiar with Kevin Yu?
I am. Is he in the field?
Yeah,
he's 6,400.
I don't think he's in the
field. Are you guys familiar with him? Like, do you guys
love Kevin Yu. I have cashed a lot of 40 bets. He's on my fantasy team. I don't think he's actually in the field, though.
No way. He's in the field. 6,400.
Hold on. No, he is not in the field. I just did a search of the tee times. He's not, because he's on my fantasy team and he did not have the active check mark next to
him. What? This guy was like, I was so pumped to play this guy. He's on the DraftKings slate.
Tiger and Berger, though. So I just looked through because I was disappointed too.
And you guys are telling me that Vegas is going to be chalk too. I need to find new guys in the sixes then.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad we had this talk.
If Kevin Yu was in this field,
can you imagine if you put him in, put him in your field and just killed all your fucking lineups.
I was 1,000,000% going to play him if you guys hadn't said anything.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't have any other answers in the sixes now that my boy is gone.
I am a big Kevin Yu fan. So
yeah, he's good.
I should start the maybe I'll do a Kevin Yu Twitter tracker account. That'll be my grand return to Twitter there. So
God damn.
You mentioned him quite frequently.
How about one last name, another former Ponzi scheme, maybe?
Justin Suh? Yeah, he's good. Pretty good.
I think he's starting around in the form.
I mean, I like that.
Accurate off the tee, hitting his irons pretty good. The proximity ranges this year have been pretty good.
I'm good with that one. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Do we know why Lanto withdrew from Genesis? Is it another injury?
I don't know.
Maybe. Who can say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, man. And well, that fucking wraps it up. Why don't you tell everybody your 9 bazillion pieces of content and where they can find you?
Just go to my Twitter account. It's probably the easiest way. ADP Lack Sports on Twitter. But yeah, you can find my writing everywhere. RickRunkett.com, Golf Digest, Golf Monthly, Odds Checker, you know, all over the place. But yeah, my podcast is good too, if you want to check that out. I have an episode coming out a little bit later than normal because, you know, bigger guests are harder to book. Yeah. You know, it's harder to lock those guys down. But I met this guy at the Genesis and we had a good time together at the Genesis. He's a really good dude. And, you guys probably know him from his Barstool and his Netflix now fame too. But yeah. I have an episode with Rappaport coming out probably sometime later tomorrow in the afternoon.
Sweet. Well, that's a good get, man. Go check out his podcast. It's solid. It's not just picks. It's better than that. And so that's the shit I enjoy. And other than that, tomorrow. We got John Haselbauer on for.
Oh, you guys got a good one too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so we'll do the betting show
with John.
John, and he will no doubt be betting Keegan with me, so that'll be fun. We can all cry together. And other than that, you know where to find Steve. He's in our Discord. You can find me on Twitter by @Boston_Capper. Listen, go give us a rate and review if you guys got a minute, or go join the YouTube channel. It helps more than you know. So other than that, let's fucking go, boys.